Chapter 33. Blue Carp Street. Min sat cross-legged on the bed, not as comfortable a position in a riding dress as it was in breeches, and rolled one of her knives across the backs of her fingers. It was an absolutely useless skill, Tom had told her, but sometimes it caught people's eyes and made them pay attention without need to do more. In the middle of their room, Rand was holding his scabbarded sword up to study the cuts he had made in the peace bond, and paid her no attention at all. The dragon's heads on the backs of his hands glittered, metallic red and gold. "You admit this has to be a trap," she growled at him. "Lan admits it. A half-blind goat in Salizen has more brains than to walk into a trap. Only fools kiss hornets or bite fire," she quoted. "A trap isn't really a trap if you know it's there," he said absently, bending the end of one of the severed wires a little to line up better with its mate. "If you know it's there, maybe you can see a way to walk in so it isn't a trap at all." She threw the knife as hard as she could. It flew in front of his face to stick quivering in the door, and she gave a little jump, recalling the last time she had done that. Well, she was not lying on top of him now, and Cadswain was not going to walk in, worse luck. Burn the man, that frozen knot of emotions in her head had not even quivered when the knife streaked by, not by so much as a flicker of surprise. "Even if you just see Gedwin and Torval, you know the others will be there hiding. Light, they could have 50 sellswords waiting."
"In Farmadding?"
He stopped looking at the knife sticking in the door, but only to shake his head and go back to examining the peace bond.
"I doubt there are 2 mercenaries in the whole city, Min. Believe me, I don't intend to get myself killed here. Unless I can see how to spring the trap without getting caught, I won't go near it."
There was no more fear in him than in a stone, and about as much sense. He did not intend to get killed, as if anyone ever intended to. Scrambling off the bed, she opened the front of the bedside table long enough to take out the strap that Mistress Keene made sure was in every room, even if she did rent to outlanders. The thing was as long as her arm and as wide as her hand, with a wooden handle at one end and the other end split into 3 tails.
"Maybe if I took this to you, it would clear your nose enough to smell what's in front of you," she cried.
That was when Nynaeve and Lan and Olivia walked in. Nynaeve and Lan were cloaked, and Lan had his sword at his hip. Nynaeve had removed all of the jewelry except for 1 gemmed bracelet and the jeweled belt, the well. Lan closed the door quietly. Nynaeve and Olivia stood staring at Min with the strap raised over her head. Hastily, she dropped the thing to the flowered carpet and kicked it underneath the bed with the side of her foot.
"I don't understand why you're letting Lan do this, Nynaeve," she said as firmly as she could.
At the moment, that was not particularly firm.
Why did people always walk in at the worst time?
"A sister has to trust her warder's judgment sometimes," Nynaeve said coolly, drawing on her gloves. Her face belonged on a porcelain doll for all the emotion it displayed. Oh, she was being Aes Sedai to her toenails. "He isn't your warder, he's your husband," Min wanted to say. "And at least you can go along to look after him. I don't know if my warder will ever marry me, and he threatened to tie me up if I tried to go with him." Not that she had argued very hard on that point. If he was going to be a bull goose fool, there were better ways to save him than trying to stick a knife in somebody.
"If we are going to do this, sheepherder," Lan said grimly, "best we be about it while there's still light to see."
His blue eyes seemed colder than ever, and hard as polished stones. Nynaeve gave him a worried look that almost made Min feel sorry for her. Almost. Rand belted his sword over his coat, then settled his cloak with the hood hanging down his back and turned toward her. His face was as hard as Lan's, his blue-gray eyes almost as cold, but in her head that frozen stone blazed with veins of fiery gold. She wanted to tangle her hands in the black-dyed hair that almost brushed his shoulders and kiss him, no matter how many people were watching. Instead, she folded her arms across her chest and lifted her chin, making her disapproval clear. She did not intend for him to die here either, and she was not about to let him start thinking she would give in just because he was stubborn. He did not try to take her in his arms.
Nodding as if he actually understood, he picked up his gloves from the small table by the door. "I'll be back as soon as I can, Min. Then we'll go to Kedswain." Those golden veins continued to glow even after he left the room, followed by Lan. Nynaeve paused, holding the door. "I will look after them both, Min. Olivia, please stay with her and see she doesn't do anything foolish." She was all cool, dignified, Aes Sedai composure, until she glanced into the hallway.
"Burn them!" she yelped. "They're leaving!"
And she ran, leaving the door standing half open. Olivia closed it.
"Shall we play games to pass the time, Min?"
Crossing the carpet, she sat down on the stool in front of the fireplace and took a piece of string from her belt pouch.
"Cat's cradle?"
"No, thank you, Olivia," Min said, almost shaking her head at the eagerness in the woman's voice. Rand might be complacent about what Olivia was going to do, but Min had set herself to get to know her, and what she had found was startling. On the surface, the former Damani was a mature woman who appeared well into her middle years, stern and fierce and even intimidating. She certainly managed to intimidate Nynaeve. Nynaeve seldom said please to anyone except Olivia. But she'd been made Damani at 14, and her love of playing children's games was not the only oddity about her. Min wished there was a clock in the room, though the only inn she could imagine with a clock in every room would be an inn for queens and kings. Pacing back and forth under Olivia's watchful gaze, she counted seconds in her head, trying to judge how long it would take Rand and the others to go beyond sight of the inn. When she decided enough time had passed, she took her cloak from the wardrobe. Olivia darted to block the door, hands on her hips, and there was nothing childlike in her expression.
"You aren't going after them," she drawled in a firm voice. "It would only cause trouble now, and I can't allow that."
With those blue eyes and that golden hair, her coloring was all wrong, but she reminded Min of her Aunt Rana, who always seemed to know when you had done something wrong and always saw to it that you did not want to do it again.
"Do you remember those talks we had about men, Olivia?"
The other woman turned bright red, and Min hurriedly added, "I mean the one about how they don't always think with their brains." She had often heard women sneer that some other women knew nothing about men, but she had never actually met one of those until she encountered Olivia. She really did know nothing. "Rand will get himself in more than enough trouble without me. I am going to find Kedswain, and if you try to stop me..." She held up a clenched fist. For a long moment, Olivia frowned at her. Finally, she said,
"Let me get my cloak, and I'll go with you."
There were no sedan chairs or liveried servants to be seen on Blue Carp Street, and carriages would never have fit along the narrow, twisting passage. Slate-roofed stone shops and houses lined the street, most of two stories, sometimes jammed, one hard against the next, and sometimes with a little alleyway between. The pavement was still slick from the rain, and the cold wind tried to carry Rand's cloak away, but people were back out and bustling about. Three street guards, one with a catchpole on his shoulder, paused to glance at Rand's sword, then went on their way. Not far along on the other side of the street, the building housing the shop of the bootmaker Zeram rose a full three stories, not counting the attic under the peaked roof. A skinny man with very little chin dropped Rand's coin into his purse and used a thin strip of wood to lift a brown-crusted meat pie from the charcoal grill on his barrow. His face was lined, his dark coat shabby, and his long graying hair was tied with a leather cord. His eyes flickered to Rand's sword and looked away quickly.
"Why do you ask about the bootmaker? That's the best mutton there."
A toothy grin made his chin almost vanish, and his eyes suddenly looked very shifty.
"First Council herself don't eat better."
"There were meat pies called pasties when I was a boy," Luz Theron murmured. "We would buy them in the country and..." Juggling the pie from hand to hand, the heat soaking through his gloves, Rand suppressed the voice. "I like to know what kind of man makes my boots. Is he suspicious of strangers, for instance? A man doesn't do his best work if he's suspicious of you."
"Yes, mistress,"
the chinless fellow said, ducking his head to a stout gray-haired woman with a squint. Wrapping 4 meat pies in coarse paper, he handed her the package before taking her coins.
A pleasure, mistress. The light shine on you.
She tottered away without a word, clutching the wrapped pies under her cloak, and he grimaced sourly at her back before returning his attention to Rand.
Zeram never had a suspicious bone, and if he did, Milsa wouldn't let him keep it. That's his wife. Since the last of his children married, Milsa's been renting out the top floor. Whenever she finds somebody, don't mind being locked in at night anyway,
he laughed.
Milsa had stairs put in right up to the third floor, so it's private. But she wouldn't pay for having a new door cut as well. So the stairs come out in the shop. And she's not trusting enough to leave that unlocked at night. You going to eat that pie or just look at it?
Taking a quick bite, Rand wiped hot juice from his chin and walked over to shelter beneath the eaves of a small cutler's shop. Along the street, others were snatching a quick meal from the food peddlers, meat pies or fried fish or twisted paper cones heaped with roasted peas. 3 or 4 men as tall as he, and 2 or 3 women as tall as most of the other men in the street, might have been Aiel. Maybe the chinless fellow was not as shifty as he seemed, or maybe it was just that Rand had eaten nothing since breakfast, but Rand found himself wanting to gobble the pie down and buy another. Instead, he made himself eat slowly. Zeram seemed to be doing a good business. A steady, if not constant, flow of men went into his shop, most carrying a pair of boots to be mended. Even if he let visitors go up without sending word ahead, he would be able to identify them later, and maybe so would 2 or 3 others. If the renegades were renting the top floor from the bootmaker's wife, being locked in at night would not inconvenience them much. To the south, an alleyway separated the bootmakers from a single-story house, a dangerous drop, but on the other side, a 2-story building with a seamstress on the ground floor stood wall-to-wall with the bootmaker. Zeram's building had no windows except at the front. In back was another alley, for taking away rubbish, Rand had already checked. But there had to be a way onto the roof so the slates could be repaired when necessary. From there, it would be a short drop to the seamstress's roof, with only 3 more to cross before another low building, a candlemaker's shop, and an easy jump to the street or into the alley behind the buildings. There would not be a great deal of risk in it at night, or even in daylight, if you stayed back from the street and were careful about the guards' patrols when you came down. The way Blue Carp Street bent, the nearest watchstands were out of sight. 2 men approaching the bootmakers made him turn away and pretend to peer through the bubbled panes of the cutler's small shop window at a display of scissors and knives fastened to a board. One of the men was tall, though not as tall as the possible Aiel men. Their deep cowls hid their faces, but neither carried a pair of boots. And although they held their cloaks with both hands, the wind flapped the tails of them enough to show the bottoms of scabbarded swords. A gust pulled the shorter man's hood from his head, and he snatched it back again, but not before the damage was done. Charles Gedwin had taken to wearing his hair caught at the nape of his neck in a silver clip set with a large red stone, but he was still a hard-faced man with a challenging look about him. And Gedwin's presence made the other Torval. Rand was willing to wager on it. None of the others was as tall. Waiting until the pair had gone into Zeram's shop, Rand licked a few greasy crumbs from his gloves and went in search of Nynaeve and Lan. He found them before he was far enough along the curve of the street to lose sight of the bootmakers. The candlemakers he had marked as a way down from the rooftops stood a little behind him, with an alley at one side. Ahead, the narrow street twisted back the other way. No more than 50 paces farther on was a watchstand with a street guard at the top, but another building of 3 stories, a cabinet maker's that shared the alleyway with the candlemaker, blocked the rooftops beyond from his view.
6 people recognized Torval and Gedwin, Lan said. But none of the others.
He kept his voice low, though no one passing more than glanced at the 3 of them. A glimpse of 2 men wearing swords beneath their cloaks was enough to make everyone who noticed step a little faster.
A butcher shop down the street says those 2 buy from him, Nynaeve said, but never more than enough for 2.
She looked sideways at Lan, as though hers was the real proof.
I saw them, Rand said. They're inside now.
Nynaeve, can you lift Lan and me to that rooftop from the alley behind the building? Nynaeve frowned at Zerum's building, rubbing the belt around her waist with one hand.
One at a time, I could, she said finally. But it would use more than half what the well holds. I wouldn't be able to lift you down again.
Up is enough, Rand told her. We will leave over the rooftops and climb down right over beside the candlemaker. She protested, of course, as they walked back down the street toward the bootmaker's shop. Nynaeve always fought anything she had not thought of herself.
I am just supposed to put you on the roof and wait, she muttered, scowling left and right so hard that as many people shied away from her as from the men flanking her,
swords or no swords. She thrust her hand out from under her cloak to show the bracelet with its pale red stones.
This can cover me with armor better than any steel. I'd hardly even feel a sword hitting me. I thought I would be going inside with you.
And do what? Rand asked softly. Hold them with the power for us to kill? Kill them yourself? She frowned at the paving stones in front of her feet. Walking beyond Zerum's shop, Rand paused in front of the low house and looked around as casually as he could. There were no street guards in sight, but when he prodded Nynaeve into the narrow alley, he moved quickly. He had not seen any guards before following Rochide, either.
You are very quiet, Lan said, following close behind.
She took three more quick steps before replying, without slowing or looking back.
I didn't think before, she said quietly. I was thinking of it as an adventure, confronting dark friends, renegade Ashaman. But you are going up there to execute them. You'll kill them before they know you're there if you can, won't you?
Rand glanced over his shoulder at Lan, but the older man only shook his head, as confused as he was. Of course they would kill them without warning if they could. This was not a duel, it was the execution she had named it. At least, Rand hoped very much it would be. The alley that ran behind the buildings was a little wider than the one to the street, the rocky soil rutted with the tracks of the rubbish barrows that were pushed along at mornings. Blank stone walls rose around them. No one wanted a window to watch the rubbish carts. Nynaeve stood peering up at the back of Zerom's building, then suddenly sighed.
Kill them in their sleep if you can, she said,
very quietly for such fierce words. Something unseen wrapped snugly around Rand's chest beneath his arms, and slowly he rose into the air, floating higher until he drifted over the edge of the overhanging eave. The invisible harness vanished, and his boots dropped to the sloping roof, sliding a little on the damp gray slates. Crouching, he moved back on all fours. A few moments later, Lan floated up to land on the roof, too. The warder crouched as well and peered into the alley below.
She is gone, Lan said finally.
Twisting around to face Rand, he pointed.
There is our way in.
It was a trap door set among the slates high toward the peak, with metal flashing to keep water out of the attic that lifting it revealed. Rand lowered himself into a dusty space, dimly lit by the light through the trap door. For a moment he hung by his hands, then let go, dropping the last few feet. Except for a chair with three legs and a chest with the lid thrown open, the long room was as empty as the chest. Apparently, Zerum had stopped using the attic for storage when his wife began taking renters. Stepping lightly, the two men searched the floorboards until they found another, larger trapdoor lying flat against the floor. Lan felt the brass hinges and whispered that they were dry, but unrusted. Rand drew his sword and nodded, and Lan snatched the trapdoor open. Rand was not sure what he would find when he sprang down through the opening, using a hand on the coping to control his fall. He landed lightly on the balls of his feet in a room that seemed to have taken the attic's place from the wardrobes and cabinets shoved against the walls, the wooden chests piled on one another, and tables with chairs standing atop them. The last thing he expected, though, was two dead men sprawled on the floor as if they had been dragged into the storage room and flung down. The black, swollen faces were unrecognizable, but the shorter of the pair wore a silver hair clip set with a large red stone. Dropping soundlessly from the attic, Lan looked at the corpses and raised an eyebrow. That was all. Nothing ever surprised him. "Fane is here," Rand whispered. As if saying the name were a trigger, the twin wounds in his side began throbbing, the older like a disk of ice, the newer a bar of fire across it. "It was him sent the letter." Lan gestured toward the trap door with his sword, but Rand shook his head. He had wanted to kill the renegades with his own hands, yet now that Torval and Gedwin were dead, and almost certainly Kismin too, there was that swollen corpse mentioned by the merchant at the Golden Wheel. Now, he realized he did not care who killed them so long as they were dead. If a stranger finished Dashiva, it would not matter. Fane was another matter. Fane had harrowed the two rivers with Trollocs and given him a second wound that would not heal. If Fane was within reach, Rand would not allow him to escape. He motioned for Lan to do as they had in the attic and set himself in front of the door with his sword in both hands. When the other man pulled the door open, he darted into a large lamp-lit room with a posted bed against the far wall and a fire crackling in a small fireplace. Only the speed of his movement saved him. A flicker of movement caught the corner of his eye, something tugged at the cloak, billowing behind him, and he spun awkwardly to fend off slashes of a curved dagger. Every movement was an effort of will. The wounds in his side no longer throbbed. They clawed at him, molten iron and the very soul of ice warring to rip him open. Luz Theron howled. It was all Rand could do to think with the agony.
"I told you he's mine," the bony man screamed, dancing away from Rand's cut.
With his face contorted in fury, his big nose and ears that stuck out made him seem something contrived to frighten children. But his eyes held murder. Teeth bared in a snarl, he looked like a weasel wild with killing fury, a rabid weasel ready to savage even a leopard. With that dagger, he could kill any number of leopards.
"Mine!"
Padan Fan shrieked, leaping back again as Lan rushed into the room.
"Kill the ugly one!"
Only when Lan turned away from Fane did Rand realize someone else was in the room, a tall, pale man who came almost eagerly to meet the warder blade to blade. Toram Riotan's face was haggard, but he flowed into the dance of swords with the grace of the blade master he was. Lan met him with an equal grace, a dance of steel and death. Startled as Rand was to see the man who had tried to claim the throne of Kyrian, in a worn coat and far matting, he kept his eyes on Fane and his sword toward the one-time peddler. Dark friend and worse, Moraine had called him long ago. The blinding pain in Rand's side made him stumble as he advanced on Fane, ignoring the stamp of boots and the ring of steel on steel behind him as he ignored Luz Theron's groans in his head. Fane danced and darted, trying to get close enough to use the dagger that had made the never-healing slash in Rand's side, growling curses in a low voice as Rand's blade forced him back. Abruptly, he turned and ran toward the back of the building. The torment tearing at Rand faded to mere throbbing as Fane vanished from the room, but he followed cautiously even so. At the doorway, though, he saw that Fane was not trying to hide. The man stood waiting for him at the head of stairs leading down, the curved dagger in one hand. The large ruby capping the hilt glittered, catching the light of the lamps set on tables about the windowless room. As soon as Rand stepped into the room, fire and ice raged in his side till he could feel his heart shuddering. Staying upright was an effort of iron will. Taking a step forward made that effort seem pale, but he took that step, and the next.
"I want him to know who is killing him," Fane whined petulantly.
He was glaring straight at Rand, but he seemed to be talking to himself.
"I want him to know, but if he's dead, then he will stop haunting my dreams. Yes, he will stop then."
With a smile, he raised his free hand. Torval and Gedwin came up the stairs with their cloaks over their arms.
"I say we aren't going near him until I know where the others are," Gedwin growled. "The Mihail will kill us if—"
Without thought, Rand twisted his wrists in cutting the wind and immediately followed with unfolding the fan. The illusion of dead men come back to life vanished, and Fane leaped back with a shriek, blood streaming down the side of his face. Suddenly he tilted his head as though listening, and a moment later, aiming a scream of wordless fury at Rand, he fled down the stairs. Wondering, Rand moved to follow the descending thumps of Fane's boots, but Lan caught his arm. "The street out front is filling up with guards," Sheepherder. A dark wetness stained the left side of Lan's coat, but his sword was sheathed, proof of who had danced that dance the better. "Time we were on the roof, if we're going." "A man can't even walk down an alley with a sword in this city," Rand muttered, sheathing his own blade. Lan did not laugh, but then he seldom did, except for Nynaeve. Shouts and screams rose up the stairwell from below. Maybe the street guards would capture Fane. Maybe he would hang for the corpses up here. It was not enough, but it would have to do. Rand was tired of what would have to do. In the attic, Lan leapt to catch the coping of the trap door on the roof and pull himself up and out. Rand was not sure he could make that leap. The agony was gone with Fane, but his side felt as if it had been beaten with axe handles. As he was gathering himself to try, Lan put his head back through the trapdoor and extended a hand.
"They may not come up right away, Sheepherder, but is there any point in waiting to see?"
Rand caught Lan's hand and let himself be drawn up to where he could catch the coping and pull himself out onto the roof. Crouching low, they moved along the damp slates to the back of the building, then began the short climb to the peak. There might be guards in the street, but there was still a chance to get away unseen, especially if they could signal Nynaeve to make a distraction. Rand reached for the roof peak, and behind him, Lan's boot slipped on the slates with a screech. Twisting around, Rand seized the other man's wrist, but Lan's weight pulled him down the slick gray slope. Vainly they scrabbled with their free hands for any hold, the edge of a slate, anything. Neither uttered a word. Lan's legs went over the edge, and then the rest of him. Rand's gloved fingers caught on something, he did not know what, and he did not care. His head and one shoulder stuck over the edge of the roof, and Lan was dangling from his grip above the 10-pace drop to the alley next to the low house.
"Let go," Lan said quietly.
He looked up at Rand, his eyes cold and hard, no expression on his face.
"Let go." "When the sun turns green," Rand told him.
If he could just pull the other man up a little, enough to catch the eave. Whatever his fingers had caught broke with a sharp snap, and the alley rushed up to meet them.